Hi, good morning, everybody. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad to be here. So, I'm Amy Spain Duncan. I am an alcoholic of the hopeless variety that you're going to hear about. And I love that theme of transformation because that's what happens here. My sobriety date is March 6th of 2010. And I am tremendously grateful for that day. And I didn't pick it. It was a gift, right? This was a gift. I could never pick a sobriety date, and we were talking about that before the meeting because my sobriety was always, next week, sometime next week, probably Monday. Monday's a good day to start something, and I would plan that I was going to get it together, buddy. I was going to get my life together. I was going to come into AA. I was going to go to detox. But it was always out in the future. It was always something I was gonna do later, and I spent a lot of years gonna do, and never did, and so I know that the on March 6th, and this is one of my favorite things in Alcoholics Anonymous, is something happened. And I love that. It's something happened, and there aren't words for it, and there's no explanation, and there's no science behind it, and there's no formula to get it right, but something happened on March 6, 2010, and March 7th, I woke up with 24 hours of sobriety. Like, hi, and I can't go 24 hours without putting something in me. That's just, and I haven't, and years of that. I remember getting a 30-day chip, and they said, like, when was the last time you had 30 consecutive days sober? And I was like, oh, wow. I don't know. I had to get out calendars and do math and call my mom, to check dates because this was unheard of. But something happened. And today, I'm going to talk about these steps, and I'm going to talk about that literature. But on March 6, 2010, I didn't have any of that. And I didn't have any of that on March 7th. I didn't have any of that on March 8th. But something had happened. And that's the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then they were like, hey, you like that? You like what you're getting? You're gonna have to work to keep it. And then the literature is introduced, then a sponsor is introduced, then this God, this relationship with this higher power. But in the beginning, man, I'm just held by grace. I'm just held by the fellowship. I'm held by prayer. I'm held by my gift of desperation, and this magic that met me where I was and allowed me to put together 24 hours, and 48 hours. And I love that part of the deal that we do. And that's why you never know who's going to get it. I think if they were taking bets, I was the long shot, right? I came in here pretty badly mangled. And I gotta say, I gotta talk real quick about the ladies that are gonna speak today, and the ones that have shown up, and the men too. But man, the ladies, thank you for your service and staying at the door, right? Standing by the door. So when I stumbled in, you were there to say, "Ah, oh, girl, we got you. Come on, we like your kind of crazy. Sit by us and let's go to this meeting and come join us here." And that inclusion, that thing that you do when we get here and we don't feel worthy and we don't feel a part of and we're not sure if we're even gonna make it. Man, thank you for the women who make sure to welcome in the new woman. And because I wouldn't be here if you went. I went talking to men. I didn't like men. When I heard men, I saw money and motive. They were good for just a few things, and the list was short. I didn't like any of them. I had this hatred, this resentment, this thing in me that I didn't trust, and I rejected. But I wasn't sure about you girls either, right? Because I'm the girl that'll sleep with your boyfriend, right? You don't like me. You guys don't like me. You get in circles and you talk about women like me, right? You shun me when I walk up, and I know that. I know that, and I don't have anywhere to land, man. I don't know which way to go because the men, man, I'm done with them. I don't even want to, I was so mean. My husband still says I'm the meanest woman he's ever met, but he likes it. It's fine. He likes crazy women, but thank God for that. But I didn't know where to go, man. And the women who said, "Me too." And you're okay, and you're safe here. And we're all a little crazy, man. And you're gonna get that straightened out, and you're gonna be a new creation. That was the hope. That was the thing you gave me. So thank you for that. Let's see, Ralph, I don't know where I'm going either. That's what it's fun when I come to these things, because my sponsees, I'll think I did awful, whatever. And my sponsees say, you keep getting invited because you're the wild card. It's like, let's see what she'll do. Just put her up there and wind her up. Let's see what happens. And it's amazing. It's so much fun. This thing we do is so much fun. But in the beginning, it's just not, man. In the beginning, it's not fun. And the road here, it quickly turned ugly, fast. It wasn't fun. It went from the days of even pretending that drinking was fun were long gone. They were long gone, man. I had my first drink in junior high, and it was the solution, right? My friend Carla says alcohol's the longest relationship I was ever in. And I thought, me too, right? Because it was the constant. It was the thing, no matter what was going on in life. Fighting with mom, changing high schools, breaking up with him, sleeping with her, lost jobs, the emotional thing. There was always that, man, booze. It was the slim booze. I love Bill on page 6, 2 bottles of gin and oblivion. Man, no matter what's going on, the world's falling apart, the market's crashing, people are jumping from high tower. I don't know what to do. Booze. Man, I ran to that thing for that solution, that ease and comfort, that place where I could be, where it didn't matter and the noise was quiet. And I did that over and over and over again. And from the first time I drank, like, that was what I was going to do. And listen, I wasn't like raised in an orphanage in a third world country where we fought for food and water. My life wasn't that hard. I'm a privileged American, who had most of all of my basic needs and most of my wants met. Like, but in here, it's bad. Right? Because I have this disease of perception. I wear these glasses that tell me you're against me and it's all bad. I live in a hostile world. Right? But I made it all up. I don't know why I saw it that way. My sister and I both went to parochial schools and Catholic mass, and she heard a different message than me. We were raised by the same parents and the same, and her experience was different. I have a disease of perception. If you haven't listened to New Pair of Glasses or Red, man, isn't that what we need? Because I come to you and I'm viewing the world from this place of hostility and unfairness. And I'm always getting the short end of the stick. I never win in my mind. You always got over on me, and I'm defensive, and I got my dukes up, and I just start swinging in the dark, man. And that's who I am. It just seems I am. And I don't know how to be different. So what I do is I start finding more people that think like me. Right? Sort of companionship. That's what I do in my drink. It's what I do in my sobriety. I want to hang out with Teresa. I want to hang out with June. I want to hang out with Candace. I want to hang out with people who see the world like I see the world. And I did that in my drinking, but what it led me to were all sorts of sorted places, my dad said I was always looking for a place where my unacceptable behaviors would be acceptable. And that's what I need. I need you off my back, man. I need you to not say nothing about what I do or my behaviors. And if you do, I'm going to find new friends, man. I got to be where I'm okay, because I'm a kid that was always in trouble. I was always, you talk too much, you can't sit still, you forget things, my potential, because I read well and I'm a great test taker, because I'm a good bullshitter. I'm sorry for the cut. That's the truth, though. Really, I'm a hustler. I got the gift of gab, and I can read a room, man. And so I can take a test on something I've never seen, and just through the process of elimination, but that makes those people think you're smart. And then they put expectations on you. They want you to excel and do well, man. I don't want that kind of pressure. I'm just trying to get by. I'm uncomfortable. I'm 8, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. And I already know I don't need that pressure, man. And I already know you should start lowering your expectations when it comes to me. That self-worth is diminishing. And I want to hang out with bad boys doing bad things, man. That's where I feel good. I want to be hip, slick, and cool, I like tough guys, because I feel safe. And I'm scared. And I don't know I'm scared. I got no idea I'm scared. I did that first fear inventory, and they said, list your fears. And I put spiders and snakes, and I made the snakes up. I just felt like you wanted more than one thing. You know, I was trying to, I'd lie in on my fourth step to find acceptance. And they're like, you know, my sponsor's like, honey, that's not what we're talking about. I was like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. I had, anger had replaced fear. Suspicion had replaced fear. This bravado that I wore replaced fear, and I wouldn't admit to fear. And I didn't even recognize it in my life. I struggled with that part of the book, the corrosive thread that runs through every fiber of our being. That seems ridiculous. Who are these wimps, you know, running around scared of everything? Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. I didn't understand. I didn't understand what you guys were talking about when it came to that stuff, man. And in this deal, we get this breaking open, this thing, this something happened. Something happened. And all of a sudden, I've got these tools and this path and this thing I'm going to do. And it's insane. Gratitude is one of our themes for today. And I didn't have, I'm going to tell you a story. I had two kids. By the time I was 21, I had dropped out of college and working as a cocktail waitress at a bar. I love bars. I like grimy and smoky and dirty. Like, that's my jam, you know. And it's not hard to be the prettiest girl when you're 21 at a dive bar and the competition's 80, you know. I like that. Like, I like odds in my favor, you know, when I go in. So as I hung out at places like that, and I was on food stamps. I was the first person in my family to ever be on government assistance. And my mom asked me to keep it a secret and make sure my grandparents didn't know. Like, there was a lot of shame about this in my family that I kind of set myself up through circumstances, right? My own, you know, okay, it's my own making. This is where I'm at. And I've had these two children out of wedlock, and I have no education, no real marketable skills yet. I'm going to find some later. But in the beginning, I'm just fumbling around serving drinks and hustling you to pay my bills. You know, that's the way I rolled. And I was in these lines, right? You used to, for you younger people, when you were on food stamps, you just had to go stand in line. You didn't get, there was no cards, anything like that. You went by the letter of your last name, by the day of the month, and you went and stood in line with everybody else. And they gave you Monopoly money, basically, books of this stuff. And now, one angle of approach would be, wow, I really screwed my life up and I need some help. And you lovely taxpayers out there in this government that under which I live has set up a way so me and my kids don't go hungry. That's pretty cool. And all I got to do to get this free money for groceries for me and my children, because I can't provide that. All I got to do is show up on this day and they're going to hand me this Monopoly money. I get to go to the store and I get to buy cereal and milk and food for my family. What a beautiful thing. Not this cat. No, no, no. I'm in line talking about who's running this thing. Why am I waiting so long? This is BS. I need to talk to somebody, right? Like, gratitude for what? You know, this thing, expect and deserve. That was my attitude. I expect and I think I deserve. And I mean, the ego is just insane. I can't see things and there's no room for gratitude. And and here's more to that story. They got so tired of seeing me in their line because I'm trouble, you know, and I don't have gratitude. I'm expect and deserve I'm trouble, you know, you just don't want me around. I'm riling up the other. Yeah, you ought to go tell them that, you know. I like to feed the chaos and the BS, get everybody fired up. And they called me in the back one day. They said, you know, we got this program. And you seem smart. And I like when people say that. I go, oh, yeah, I'm smart. They say, we'll pay for you to go to school. And I said, oh, I can't afford daycare. They said, no. We're gonna pay for daycare. We're gonna buy you all this stuff. You should go to school and get out of our line. That's what you should do. So I agreed, and they sent me to a trace again. you know, these programs that were helping me, man. And they sent me to the school. I got to go to LPN school. It's like a 1-year trade school kind of deal. And I got to go to that and get a nursing license that was going to serve me my whole, you know, my entire life. And that opportunity. And there was no real gratitude for that opportunity. I drank before class. We'd break for lunch and I'd go to the Cupies, the bar across the street, and kill as many beers in a shot as I could before I went back to class. I would smoke weed in the parking lot and come in and disrupt class. You know, like I'm just trouble, man. I'm trouble, and my glasses aren't on straight. And this is the way I'm operating at 21, 22 years old. You know, I end up getting married, and that's a whole other story. But I dated brothers and married one of them. You know, I had to pick between the two. I think I got the right one for what I needed at the time. And so I married this guy, and we, but I got alcoholism. I mean, and it's bad. This isn't like where I crossed a line or had a period of honeymoon drinking. Like I've been drinking about 10 years at this point, and I'm young, but I'm a daily drinker, and I put something in my body every day to feel different than I do. And my life is chaotic, and I expect and deserve, and everything's a drama and insane, and I'm violent. I'm a rager. And a year into that marriage, he says, I'm taking the kids and I'm leaving you, you know, cause when I'm nobody's wife, when I'm drinking, I'll tell you that. And I'm nobody's mother. I'm nothing. I'm a drunk. When I drink, I'm a drunk. That's the only role I'm going to be present in is this party girl, drunk, you know. There's no being a daughter, being a friend, being a wife, being a mom, like, I got this one thing I'm doing and it's drinking. And he threatens to leave me. And it's the first time I went to Alcoholics Anonymous on my own, right? There were signs, right? Ominous warnings. I was taken to an AA meeting at 15 years old, right? So that everybody knew my drinking was a problem long before I knew my drinking was a problem or was willing to do something about it. My friend Peter says, we live it forward, we understand it back. I didn't know any of this while it's happening, right? You taught me this, and I was able to. Teresa's here, and she says, it's an invitation. Step one is an invitation. And I took that invitation to examine my relationship with alcohol. And in that invitation, I'm able to kind of look back at everything that got me here, that longstanding relationship with alcohol, and see it a little clearer. But in the moment, when it's happening, it's just happening. Life's just happening. I have no awareness, really, no understanding. And I haven't connected the dots that any of this, the two kids out of wedlock, the fights, the change in high schools, the failed relationship. I got no idea that any of that has to do with drinking. I cannot connect the dots. I do not. Drinking is the solution, and this is a list of my problems, and none of my problems are caused by drinking. In my mind, they are the solution to all these problems. I can't connect the dots. I can't see how alcoholism and all that comes with alcoholism, this spiritual malady, this ego, these out of control instincts, like none of that. I can't connect the dots. I don't have that level of insight yet in my life. And so I come to you for the first time. And I have fellowship sobriety, man. I love AA. I've always loved AA. I've never been a person who didn't love AA. I loved AA. You smell good. You're funny. You're witty. Some of the greatest people I know are in Alcoholics Anonymous. Same guys I was drinking with at the bar. They're just here. I still like you, you know, and you smell good and you're friendly and I'm not in trouble. Alcoholics Anonymous is the only place I'm not in trouble. See, everywhere I go, I'm in trouble. Everywhere I go, I'm in trouble. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not in trouble. You're like me. And you don't ask silly questions like, why would you do that? That's a silly question to ask an alcoholic. Of course, that's what you did. My sponsees are like, I'm afraid to tell you something. I'm like, don't be. Let me have it. And there's no shock and awe. You know, it's like absolute 100% that's what you did. You know, Dad used to always talk about you know, we all lose our minds, you know, when somebody relapses. Oh my God, I can't believe it. Dad's like, can't believe an alcoholic got drunk. I don't know. You're easy to surprise then. Our book says that, right? We will chase this to the gates of insanity and death. It is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker, man. If I'm not treating this thing, it's treating me. There's no surprise. The surprise is when I stay sober. The surprise is when I show up for the commitment, when I be of service, when I'm willing to pick up the girl and go to the meeting and do the step work. You know, that's surprising that someone as selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and inconsiderate as me will, you know, do something for somebody else. That's surprising. Us drinking, that's what we do. And you were never surprised when I messed up. And you never clutched your pearls or shook your finger at me. And I love that. And I love that some old timer will beat your story. Oh, that's nothing. You know, and that's me. Because when I got here, so I don't stay. I don't stay because I have fellowship sobriety and I get real busy. I don't know if you guys, anybody new in sobriety or old in sobriety or whatever, we get these great, big, juicy lives that we get to live in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you get to be a mom and you get to be a wife or a husband and you get invited places and people want you to do things with them and you get a job and then you get promoted, you know, and I start collecting things, you know, I love things and I got so busy in this big juicy life that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me that I don't have time for Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And so what happened to me, I see it and it breaks my heart. I watch it happen, man. And, it's devastating. But it happened, right? I got too busy. Got too busy being a mom. I was a good mom. I was a soccer mom, a vacation Bible school mom. I took the kids to church mom, homeroom mom, PTA mom. I was the mom, man. These kids were my everything. And I forgot that moms get drunk too. And I stopped treating that thing I had, this alcoholism. I thought I could know better and do better and I won't get like that again. That's what I thought. Because now I am plugged in, man, and everything's good and the marriage is good and the house is bigger and the kids are happy and I'm good, you know. And I hadn't read the book. I didn't know. Now were members of Alcoholics Anonymous telling me, hey, sister, this ain't gonna work and you need to be at your home group and you gotta keep doing the deal and all that. Yeah, they were saying that. But that, you know, that was for them. I didn't need that because of that terminal uniqueness, that thing that convinces me that I'm different than you. Harold Long calls it the delusion of inequality, the delusion of separateness. And that's where I was, man. I was in this place. And I fade out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a real alcoholic. So what happens to alcoholics happened to me. And I drink again. It's just a matter of time. And I drink again. And I love, you know, one thing our book doesn't talk about is the patience that alcoholism. It's a subtle foe. I love that. Subtle foe, man. Subtle foe. And I was tricked. I was tricked. I wasn't paying attention. And I didn't connect the dots. And those problems start occurring again, but it's not the drink. It's that list of problems. That's why I drink. The drink is still a solution. Don't take my drink. I think I'm still managing, but nothing is manageable. The alcoholic life seems the only normal one. So the fact that they're coming to shut off the electricity, I mean, that doesn't speak to unmanageability. That speaks to the high cost of living in this unfair society. You know, I again, the glasses are crooked, man. I can't see again. And my thinking quickly reverts and I'm in that hostile place and that victim stance and it's everybody else's fault. And the blame game is strong, man. And I take it to like conspiracy level, but you know, like I like to smoke a little stuff, drink a little whiskey and tell you about, you know, how the cards are stacked against us, you know. Saying that the book talks about the martyr on the beach talking about the state of the world. That was me, like at the campfire, you know, with the whiskey bottle and talking about, you know, we're all doomed, you know, nothing you can do. Just nasty piss and vinegar, man. All just piss and vinegar. That was me. And he ends up divorcing me, and he should have. Should have divorced me. Should have divorced me a long time before he divorced me. But he was hopeful, you know. He wanted a wife and he wanted a family and he wanted what we had. And I wouldn't allow it. Alcoholism just wasn't going to allow that to exist. And when we divorced, it got real bad for me because there's a safety net. There's this thing when you're supported, right? And you can all, your alcoholism can kind of hide in it. But when it's all stripped down and you're just standing there alone, the problem becomes very evident. There's no more blame. The blame game's over. Everybody else is gone. And I end up on the streets. And I'm homeless, like the real kind, you know? It's dark out there, man. And it's mean, man. It's mean. It's a mean place to exist. And I became dangerously antisocial. And I'm losing my mind, right? I'm losing my mind. I'm spinning out. Things don't make sense. And I love that part. Everybody says real or fancy. Yeah, my friend Kenny said he wrote that for you because I make it up, man. It's not even real. I just made it up. I made up that you're against me and they're over there and those people are coming and I react to stuff I made up in my brain, man. And I'm losing my mind and I'm 35 years old. And at 36, 37 years old, if I don't drink, I'm shaking. And I remember thinking back like to when I was in AA at 25 and the old drunks would come in and the dog or my dad or whoever was there would give them half a cup of coffee. And I said, why don't you give them a whole cup? They said, so they don't spill it on anybody. You know, I had a drunk a whole cup of coffee. That stuff's hot. And but I remember watching them like shake with their cup and think, wow, man, I'm glad my drinking never got that bad. You know, that ego. 36, 37 years old, if I walked in a meeting of alcoholics anonymous, they give me half a cup of coffee. The book talks about it sometimes affects women quicker. And that's where I was, you know. And I was going to live in this darkness way past the expiration date on that, man. I got real comfortable out there. And like I said, I lived a privileged life, private schools, always had a bed, always had a home. Hell, I had my own room, you know, in my own bed. I wasn't even sleeping with 6, 7 sisters or brothers. And I'm like, I had it nice, man. I had it nice, a nice middle-class family. My mom made sure of that. My mom made sure of that. She made sure to provide for us. She worked her tail off, man, to make sure. I shouldn't be comfortable sleeping on the street, man. That should not add up. And, you know, not brushing my hair or brushing my teeth or changing my clothes, laying with man after man without a shower in between. Why? Alcoholism, man, it'll make some real uncomfortable things comfortable because it's just what you got to do. It's what you got to do. And so you do what you got to do to get what you need to get because I am a denizen of King Alcohol at this point. Alcohol is running the show. I got zero say. You know, I would get in somewhere, some kind person would let me come to their house to shower or hang out or whatever, man. And the call of the wild, man, I would say, just stay here. You mean, just eat, just sleep, just sit still, you know. Boom, the thought, boom, I'm gone. Just one more, just one more, just one more. And I'm out there doing that. And I mean, I get violent. I will literally get and violent over $20, over $20, $10, $5. I robbed a guy one day, a store. I mean, it wasn't like armed robbery, but I went in the store that morning and I used to get those beers for $1. They were 99 cents, you know? And that's what I got to have in the morning. It's malt liquor. It's 99 cents. And it's a tall boy, man. Just got to, you know, 2 bottles of gin. I got to let the fog. So I got to get thinking right. So I can figure out my hustle for the day. And I go in the store and the store owner, a guy named Noah, this is my neighborhood. I don't have a car. It's not like I'm traveling vast differences. I circle this 6-block radius. It's kind of my hood now. It's where I stay. And so they know me. That's not, I'm not wearing a mask. Like they know who I am. And I go in there and Noah's like, Amy, that's $1.10. And I was like, $1.10. And it was just 99 cents. And he was like, yeah, the prices went up. Man, I kicked over the chip display. Like, I lose my mind because this thing is 10 cents more than it was. This is the same booze that was in there last night. You're a crook. You're a crook. You know, I mean, I'm insane over 10 cents because you might as well have said, Amy, you need $100 more to buy that beer. Man, I need that beer. I rise and know, I don't know what to tell you, brother, but me and this beer, we're leaving. So you figure that out. You know, I'm going to owe you the 10 cents, but I mean, that's just what's going to happen. And he just shook his head. I tell you, I went back to that neighborhood sober. You know, you always know how you left them, because if you walk back in and they go, you know, they have a fear response, you know, that you should question. I'm like, I come in peace. I'm sober, you know. And Noah said, thank God he called his wife out. Come out. Look, it's Amy. She's sober. You know? Oh, we are destructive in our natures, man. Destructive in our natures. I want to talk about a little bit about grace. And I talked about in the beginning when I talked about something happens. And March 6, 2010, my dad picked me up off a street corner. And he took me to a homeless shelter for a women's homeless shelter. And on one side was the homeless shelter. But if you wanted, you could go to the other side of the building, and they had a long-term treatment program, and it was free. It was only, if it cost $10, you know, I would have had to borrow it. And there was no universal healthcare. None of that existed, man. You didn't have options. You didn't have choices. People weren't buying to get you in their house and their IOP. We were the rejects. There was no dollar sign attached to us. And buddy, we were the rejects. Their help was not readily available at this level, of despair. It's been a long time since I worked a job or had anybody's insurance. They weren't letting me in anywhere, you know. But this place had this opportunity. We called it the last house on the block. And something happened. My dad said to me out front, Amy, please go in there and see if those women can help you, honey. You're gonna die. I weigh 180 solid. I was about 120, 110. You could see all the bones in my back. Face was sunken. It's hard to market that. I was a prostitute. So the uglier you get, the, you know, prices have to adjust according to quality, and things were not going well. They started out well. You know, you start out as an escort. You know, that sounds fancy. And, I've been to Millionaire's Row with a group of Sicilians from Chicago. I mean, that sounds like a lucrative job. Like, okay, yeah, I'll do that. All I got to do is go to Derby. I'll go to Derby. No, but man, at the end of all things, and I got to remember that, because I'll glamorize, man. I got euphoric recall. They broke that down for me at that homeless shelter. You know, they said, girl, you know, do you exchange your attention, your time, you know, any little physical contact you might do in exchange for money or booze or any? I said, yeah. They said, okay, we're going to help you clear this up. That's called prostitution. I said, oh. Well, I thought they were my friends. I got friends, you know. I got a little friend over here and a friend over there. No, you don't. They're not your friend. They had to break this down because I'm delusional. I don't even see that I'm dying. I'm wearing a size one. I'm not built to be a size one. I mean, I'm built to be a 12, a solid 12. You know, I'm in a size one. I'm dying, and I still don't see it. I still think, you know, if I just get a little money, if I get a little rest, if I get an opportunity, you know, I'm just waiting for the next break, and everything's going to be okay, just in this insane delusional thinking. But something happened. Something happened, and things are starting to make more sense, and I see women. And, you know, I see women who say they were like me. And they don't look like me no more. They don't talk like me no more. They don't dress like me no more, you know. But they haven't forgotten what it was like to be me. So they can reach me, right? I believe them. They earn my confidence. They earn my confidence. Because that delusion of separateness, that delusion of inequality, I would sit in meetings and women would talk and I'd think they're not like me. They probably spilled some wine on the carpet. Maybe they had a few divorces or whatever. But when somebody would get up there and get gutlet honest about the things they did to get one more and the children they abandoned and the relationships they destroyed and the truth of that, not glossed over, sugarcoated. I mean, and I love in a general way. I do. But please give me a peek. Give me a peek. And you did. And I thought, I got some hope. I got some hope. I got some hope. And I thought, and I believed, I bought in. I had this gift of desperation. I had nothing left to lose. And I bought in. I was sold on these ideas. I thought, man, here's the deal. If you're new and you don't believe nothing, that's all right. I didn't believe none either. But I believed these guys believed. I'm like, man, these guys. They really believe this, man. They've drank the Kool-Aid, and that was enough. I believed you believed it. And so that was where I started until I could get my own belief system going. I believed, I borrowed yours. I believed that you believed it. And you seemed like intelligent people who aren't going to be fooled or scammed over easy. And there were so many of you that believed it. There had to be a little truth in this, man, somewhere. And so I started, I got a sponsor and I started going through that book, and I love our literature. I love our literature. It's, it saves my life and continues to save my life today. And I hope you're in a literature study. I hope you're in a, and if you're a dude, I hope you're in a men's literature. And if you're a lady, I hope you're in a men, a ladies literature, because there's something about that. There's something about that. And I get jealous. So I want to go to the men's big books too, because I admire and respect so many. That's changed for me. I don't hate guys anymore. That's crazy. Yeah, that's a good guy. Alcoholics Anonymous introduced me to gentlemen. Gentlemen. It's an honor to know you. And I get jealous, man. I want to go to these. I want it all. I'm greedy. I got greed on my side. I want all the sobriety, all the insight. I want to know what the girls are doing. I want to know what the guys are doing. I want to know what they're doing over in Waipaw, man. What are the young people talking about? Man, I'm hungry for this thing. Because I was dying, and you started to feed me, man, and I'm a glutton. I'm staying at the table. I'm not moving back. I got to get more. And that's what I love about this deal is there's always more. How free do you want to be? How magical do you want this to become, man? And it's there for us, and it's equivalent to my willingness and my honesty and my humility and my acts of service. How uncomfortable am I willing to be? And in the beginning, it was hard. There were some hard truths, man, big chunks of truth about me. It was devastating. My fifth step, I thought, whoa, what do you mean it was all me? What do you, hold up. Every part, I played a part in all of this. Like, that was devastating. That was uncomfortable. That realization. And remember, I'm so delusional that it's a big journey from everybody else's default. It was you, Amy. What? I mean, I'm my head's blowing off. I don't know what to do next. I don't know which way to turn. Six and seven waiting on me. Just waiting on me. Because that's the only place I can go. The pump has been primed. You pulled the covers back. It's me. I'm devastated. I can't wait to hold up. Because now I'm left with all this truth about myself and no solution. I can't fix this. It's a long list. There's a lot of stuff on here. I didn't even mean to be this person. I didn't even mean to do all this. There's no way I can fix all this. Six and seven. We know you can't, sweetheart. We know you can't fix it. Six and seven. And seven gives me this grace. It gives me this place where I can start moving from no worth, right? Because I love it. And it's two words. The good and, or my good and the bad, right? The good. It mentions it. See, because I don't see any good. I'm coming out of five, and there ain't a dang thing redeemable about what you just showed me and the person that moved in all of that. and all those resentments and all that sex and all that fear. Like there's no good in that. There's no, you can say I'm resilient. You, cause none of it killed me, but there, it's hard to find, anything redeemable in this thing you just showed me about myself in five. But here comes grace. Here comes grace. Here comes grace. And you say, won't you go to your creator on your knees and ask your creator for some help in these matters? And in fact, you don't even need help. Just give them to him. Just leave those over there. But remember that you are also taking the good. And there is good. There is a bit of bad in the best of us and a bit of bad in the best, or the good in the worst of us. And you allowed me some space, some grace. Because it's hard to look at my life as it actually is. It's uncomfortable to identify my roles, my faults and mistakes, my character defects and shortcomings. See, my brain wants to go, yep, that's all you are. Look at that list. That's you. Ain't nothing good. That's all you are. And none of it matters. And you can keep faking and playing around and going, but that's who you are. It wants to defeat me. It wants to put me back in the bottle. But Alcoholics Anonymous and God's grace, it leaves this room. It leaves this room. This space where I get to be all that and something else. Yep, those things are true. But also, and that's the human condition. We're not all one thing or another thing. We are these things and also these things. And you let me get out of that rigid, concrete, absolute thing. You open my mind. My spirit, you cracked me open where these possibilities of truths exist. And I get to grow and develop and move in them. Ooh, wee. What? Man, this is the deal. It's magic. It's spiritual. It's enlightenment. It's insane. Man, how free do you want to be? Because there's more. There's levels to this. And I'm so happy to be on this journey. I'm having a blast. I'm having the time of my life. And there's bad times and there's good times. And I've made so many mistakes. I was the violence, the rage, that didn't go away. Bob Darrell talks about it. 6 and 7. I say, oh, you need me to get rid of these. I'm going to set them right back over here just in case. I mean, I'm not willing to throw them out. I might be willing to put them down, but I'm going to keep them close by. Right. Because I would still pick up bullying, intimidation, and, you know, and so I would still grab the sloth, the greed, the pride, the wrath. I was removing them, but I would still be like, oh, don't take all that. I might need that. Cause see, I'm still in a fear state. And maybe this thing ain't going to work. And when my boss starts talking like that, I want to be able to pick up some gangster. You know, I need to set him straight. I need the people to understand who they're dealing with. Ooh, all that punkophobia and bravado that I still want to carry around with me. Because I don't feel it's a process, you know. And I remember I was telling you about old timers telling you a story to make you feel better. They would tell me, we got a man I love here, Mr. Lee, I can tell this with his permission, and they tell the story about Mr. Lee was 5 years sober, and he got in a fist fight in a meeting, got violent, got in a fist fight right inside a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they told me this because they know I'm prone to this kind of behavior, but they were using Mr. Lee as an example because Mr. Lee's like 40 years sober. Like, they didn't kick him out, he didn't get drunk, he kept coming back, and everybody loved Mr. Lee. Now he's better, so we get to make, please, I don't advocate, please be respectful of the room, so at least from the preamble to the Lord's Prayer, but I'm just saying, we a whole bunch of human beings that come together. But no matter what happens, I don't have to drink today. I have an amends process. I talked about 6 and 7. What's next, man? What's next? 8 and 9. Let's go start setting the record straight. You know, last night I was with my family. I helped my mother prepare Thanksgiving with my sister and my children and my grandchildren. And we worked all week, you know, getting Thanksgiving together. And before the meal, they say, you know, hey, everybody, it's time to eat. Come in, get the grandkid, get everybody in the kitchen. And they say, Amy, will you say the prayer? See, I don't, normal people that don't seem that good. Man, I don't, that's different. That's not, that wasn't the situation before I found you. And even in the first few years, man, those people need time to heal. And there's, I'm still sketchy. You know, you still, I might pop up one way or another. They're not, they don't trust my sobriety, you know. They don't trust that it's going to last. That this, and then at some point, our sobriety and our recovery isn't something we do. It's who we are. And when it moves from what we do to simply who we are, how we show up, what they, the expectations have changed. It's, there's nobody's holding their breath to say, ooh, is she getting ready to lose it? Ooh, you know, they, in fact, the surprise now would be if I did. They'd be like, hey, that ain't like her, right? But it, but this happens through persistence and continuation and these steps. And there's so much more work to do, you know, on all of us. And that's what I love about these meetings. You know, like Ralph was saying, man, we live, we, my program looks just, probably looks just like your program. You know, Butch says, I don't know any speakers in AA. I know members of AA who speak. And today you guys are in for a treat because you have members of Alcoholics Anonymous who also, you know, are gonna communicate what they're doing and give themselves hope and give you hope that we're all the same. These delusions of inequality and separateness, they're just simply that. They're delusions. You know, if your program doesn't feel like the greatest show on earth, man, if you don't feel like you are living the dream, man, if you're not excited about this deal, man, then do more. You know, the door to magic, the door to the fourth dimension is behind the door marked inconvenient. And it's not crowded. It's not crowded in there. I promise you, you know, but I do the things that I don't want to do. And they always end up bringing me the greatest reward. And now I don't balk at that. You know, I was, how much service? What do you mean service? Service one day a month? Like, what do you, no. Fit for maximum service. I get up now and it's, what is my assignment? Well, I have a new employer. What would you have me do today, God? And sometimes his plans interfere with my plans, but I go on with his plans because it always works out better. And I got to keep doing that. And I know that that the best is yet to come. Like I'm 14 years into this deal. And if I never got anything else, I've gotten more than I deserved. More than I could possibly earn. And the greatest show on earth. You know, I got grandchildren who've never seen me drink. They've never been afraid of me. My children used to hide in their closets. I'd go pick them up from my mom's and they would cling to her and cry. You know, my grandkids, they want to go shopping Sunday. That's what they wanted to, and I can do that. And my children trust me with their children. They know that they're never going to be afraid of me. I'm never going to drop them off somewhere and not come back. I'm not going to make them promises. I don't do that anymore. I just say what I mean, and I mean what I say, and I don't have to swear to God and all my mom and all that stuff no more. It's unnecessary. It's not what I do. It's who I am. And they believe that, and I believe that. And it's because I hung out with people like you. And I always like to end, you know, this is a copycat program. You just be careful what cat you're copying. I love you all so much.